are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Hello, everyone. This is Max Landers on air. Welcome to my show. This is not my regular time. I'm filling in for someone else today. But if you want to tune into my regular show, it will be 6 a.m. on Saturdays, which it is a little early, but please tune in if you feel like it. The name of my show is Fireside Chat with Max Landers. It is, well, the format of it is interesting. It is completely free form, and what we do here is we bring in just random people, you know, friends at first, but hopefully more distinguished guests as well later, and we just interview them about their lives or really anything that is, you know, pertinent to their situations. And that is it's a project that I'm really excited for. And speaking of which, here's our first guest coming in, Spencer Walsh. Spencer Walsh is a columnist at the Tufts Daily and an incredible podcaster. He's done three different podcasts that I know of: the Spencer Walsh Show, Newsflash, which is still currently playing, and Hidden History. And those three podcasts are excellent. I suggest you give them a listen as soon as you can. He's on Spotify at SWRN, that's SWRN, Spencer Walsh Radio Network. So welcome, Spencer. Please sit down. Here, let me turn on your mic. All right, is that mic four? I'm mic three. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. Let's make sure. And Ryan Kane will be calling in today.
What?
Yeah, it's going to be incredible.
That's very exciting.
Yes. All right, well, welcome on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's very great to be here.
Good. This is excellent. This is the first one, so, you know, bear with me as I kind of figure things out. But we can do a mix of music. We can do all kinds of things. We can just talk politics.
That sounds
awesome.
Yeah.
So, all right. So
There's a lot of things going on.
So inform me. We got, obviously, it's election day, right?
Yeah. We got election day coming up tomorrow. That's going to be a very big, very big thing. This is like a lot of different. It's going to be a little bit tough to follow because there's no like one big marquee thing, but there's going to be a lot of things the media is going to cover as like you know, races to watch and like areas that are going to be very key in trying to like determine what's going to happen with the House and the Senate, like areas to watch where, yeah, I could say a little bit about that, you know.
Please do. I mean, it's very interesting to me.
Oh yeah. So it's like you got a like really two big battles coming on. You know, two big, like, kind of, you know, and those are going to be with the House and the Senate. That's going to be able to obviously determine whether, you know, Joe Biden's going to be able to get anything done.
Absolutely.
And then, well, yeah. So first, let's start with the Senate. Number one, you know, big areas where you could see, you know, a really possible Democratic gain. And, you know, up until a big, you know, a long point. You know, up until actually very recently, the Democrats felt like they were going to really just get almost like a free pickup in Pennsylvania. This is going to be one of our first big races to watch. You got John Fetterman and Dr. Oz. Have you heard about this race, Max?
I have not. Please tell me.
Okay, so you got John Fetterman on the Democratic side, who is the former mayor of Braddock, which is a steel town in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, you know, well known for, you know, working class steel roots there. And he is, you know, someone who definitely kind of exemplifies that. And he is, you know, always wears like hoodies and, you know, very just chill, casual clothing.
Interesting. A man of the people.
Yes, that's exactly what he's going for, that kind of approach. Meanwhile, you got Dr. Oz, who has been, you know, he's run pretty much a really, you know, I would say kind of lackluster campaign. He has not really hit, you know, any kind of key issues or any real narrative that hard, other than, you know, hey, I'm endorsed by Trump. And, you know, he's just really been kind of getting clowned on almost by John Fetterman for being, you know, not from Pennsylvania, for not being relatable. He's had this very viral social media campaign that's kind of made Oz look a little bit dopey, frankly. And now, at this point, it's going to be, you know, Dr. Oz, he's really hit Fetterman hard on issues of the economy. And really, the two big stories, you can pretty much look at all of these races, you know, and there's different ways of expressing the same story, pretty much. Democrats are losing ground on a very rapid basis because they're not running on the economy or, you know, inflation or anything like that, or crime. They don't have a really consistent message that is convincing on the issues that people really care about.
That's really interesting. So what are they running on?
So Fetterman, he's been a little bit better on this because, you know, he's kind of run on just how, you know, how bad Dr. Oz is. And he's had, you know, he talked a little bit interestingly about this platform, but he's, you know, he's losing ground because he's been hammered on those issues. And a lot of the times, you know, they've been losing ground, Democrats in general, because they've, you know, really just focused on abortion. They focus a lot, you know, a lot also on the fact that, you know, our democracy is in danger. You know, the rhetoric around January 6th, Republicans are going to try, you know, steal another election. And I, you know, as true as that may be, frankly, you know, it seems like, you know, for example, if Doug Mastriano, who is currently running for governor in Pennsylvania, he was literally at the January 6th riot. He is someone who I'm not the biggest person who's like, you know, freaking out about, you know, electoral stuff. But he, I think if he ends up winning, he will be somebody who is going to be very likely to, you know, try some very sketchy stuff, very sketchy business when it comes to, you know, the popular vote, because he can, with Pennsylvania state law, he can make it so that the electors that he sends to the Capitol building to certify the vote, they could just be anyone. They could vote for whoever they want. Even if Pennsylvania voted for Joe Biden, he can send, you know, pro-Trump electors, which is what he wanted to do last time. But now, yeah, he is running to do that. So if he wins, you know, that could be something very interesting. But it just has not been a very convincing message for people. I mean, maybe it got under people's skin when January 6th happened, which is literally 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But that is just not a convincing campaign message. Also, abortion, same thing. It's just kind of like losing in salience. It's just
absolutely.
I saw this, you know, data recently that was like, you know, white suburban women are trending like over the last few weeks, like a 20 plus point swing to the Republicans in the polls, which is really, really bad for.
That's
for
interesting. And why is that? Do you think that Americans in general are just so focused on the economy and the economic situation with inflation that they're just kind of pushing abortion to the side? Because, you know, it was a huge deal when that Supreme Court case dropped.
I think it's like probably a mix of both. It's a mix of a lot of things. It's like it really best be summed up by like a general sense of like, is the country in a sense of chaos or a sense of like non-chaos, like, and who's almost like making it feel that way. I think when you saw the Republicans overturning that was something, you know, essentially, you know, Republicans on the Supreme Court, as people pretty much saw it, like they're like, okay, this is ridiculous. We feel like the Republicans are making us go back as a country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, white suburban women probably definitely felt like that. Like, it was like a big, big problem that people are like, you know, I don't trust the Republicans to, you know, lead us sanely. But then, you know, kind of political, you know, the reality of people's day-to-day lives, I think, happens. And then you get people who are just, you know, the economic realities are catching up. And the Democrats just like, yeah, they do not. Maybe they know somebody who was, like, you know, the victim of a crime or something like that in a major city. And like, you know, if the fact that the Democrats don't have any kind of message for that, and or they hear in the news, also that's a big thing. They see in the news like, oh, you know, there's a crimes on the uptick, mm-hmm. and the Democrats don't have anything to do about that. That I think feel like contributes to more of a general sense that it's the Democrats actually that are going to be the ones who are causing more chaos in the country.
Interesting.
And that is going to cause, that's going to cause a lot of problems.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something, in my home state, I'm, you know, when I just voted in the last election, and it's incredible in Oregon, just like the swing that we've been seeing, just among, you know, even in my own neighborhood, I've been told by my parents that people are just completely feeling disenfranchised with the Democratic, you know, governance that's been happening. I think that's a legacy of, like, I mean, Black Lives Matter, you could say, because, again, the crime has been just skyrocketing and people blame it, maybe wrongly so, mm-hmm. on the Democratic governance. And so we see this huge swing over to the Republican side, and that's, you know, obviously not great. We have a situation where we have, you know, just polar opposites. We have basically almost like super far left, so Democratic Socialist, and then we have a Republican who wants to get rid of abortion. And so I think it's a terrible dichotomy, and I think it's not going anywhere good. And I think we're seeing that all over the country.
Yeah, I think, like, there's, I don't know exactly what are some of the interesting races you've been hearing about in Portland or in Oregon in general?
It's the governor. That's the big one. I mean, it's between, let me pull it up.
Yeah, no, I know there's also, like, a race that's, you know, people are worried about for, you know, control of the House. And, you know, by the same token, actually, there's, in my home area, there's a guy who's running who actually is in a more Democratic district, but may end up losing.
Really?
Where there's people who are more up north in New York that are more in kind of Republican areas that actually may end up winning, because the guy who ended up winning in my area to be the Democrat just is not very, like, you know, he's kind of viewed as, like, very kind of moderate and very kind of, like, also, like, corrupt also. Like,
yeah.
He's like an insider party kind of guy. My personal theory is, like, that's not, like, exciting people. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, as opposed to, like, you know, in these, like, more Democratic areas where it's, like, you've got a Republican that's, you know, kind of strong, and maybe a Democrat that's not really not that exciting. Or, you know, I know there's a Democrat in also in Oregon who Jamie McLeod Skinner,
I think her name is,
and she is struggling because, yeah, she's just been, you know, kind of completely, like, outraged.
Sure.
I think it's a factor on it.
Yeah.
And that has been also something, like, interesting to watch as well.
Interesting. So what can Democrats do, if they can do anything, to kind of shift this, or is there very little they can do now?
Yeah, I really don't think there's anything they can do now, but, like, yeah, I think, like, the what they could have done, you know, in the last maybe, like, few weeks, maybe, mm-hmm. is just, like, you know, push more of their, like, you know, economic message, push more of, like, what they, you know, because they have actually, talk about, like, the material things, really, that they've done for people, I'd say.
Okay. Got it. Interesting. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Of course, we have the affirmative action case in the Supreme Court. That is going to be another, you know, if it goes the way that everyone's saying, it could be another outrageous thing for the university system. That whole debate is fascinating. But
that would have a serious impact on
how
admissions are done, because they can't consider, like, race anymore, right? Like, what is it? What are your thoughts on that, Max?
My stance on affirmative action has really... it's changed many times, because the fact of the matter is there really isn't that much salient data out there that can kind of prove whether or not affirmative action is doing a good thing or a bad thing for minority groups. Mm-hmm. So we can obviously say, okay, diversity is a good thing to have in schools. Diversity is, you know, advantageous, and we should be working on, like, one of the roles of the university, or one of the roles that the university has kind of taken on, is the role of bringing up, you know, those who are disenfranchised, like minority groups, people in poverty, and giving them the opportunity to find success, right? That's kind of one of the roles that they've taken on. And there's, like, significant evidence both to that kind of suggests that, you know, affirmative action, you know, it's great, you know, we bring in these minority groups and they're at these great universities. That's awesome. That's great and everything. But there's significant evidence that suggests that some of these minority students are, like, struggling in these schools because they just aren't prepared for them. And this really only happens at the elite level of schools, you know, Ivy League, and, you know, I guess, like, Tufts is a good example, NESCAC, you know, NESCAC school, stuff like that. Because that's where affirmative action matters most, is at these top universities. And while, of course, there are many, you know, minority groups who are succeeding and utilizing the opportunity to find success and succeeding at these schools, some of these students are really struggling. The rate of transfer from STEM majors to humanities majors, the African American rate of transfer from STEM to humanity majors is like 50 or 60% compared to white males, which is like 9%. And so you have a situation where, you know, some students haven't been in a situation where they're academically prepared. You know, they've never faced that reality. And so there's to succeed in these schools. And so they have to change their majors, or sometimes they have to drop out. And the dropout rates kind of speak for themselves as well in the data. And I guess I can go over, I've written, like, multiple papers about it. It's very interesting. But, and then on the contrary, we have such, you know, like, scholars that say the complete opposite, that say, oh, you know, affirmative action is definitely, you know, here's some more data talking about, oh, the, you know, the graduation rates that really only matter are just, like, the overall ones, or the graduation rates have been decreasing anyways, you know, over the past 3 years or whatever, and so the data doesn't really reflect anything new, which is a little confusing, but it's just very hard to, like, sift through the data, because universities in general are very, very tight about how they, about these statistics. They don't want to obviously release them for some reason. I couldn't tell you why, but I think it's just, you know, privacy, if I had to guess. But my personal opinion on it has kind of turned into, I'm fine with it in the sense that we should have diversity, obviously, but we should bring in people who are, like, able to succeed. Because one of the most important things in universities is that feeling that you are able to succeed and be successful and have, you know, have time and energy to succeed. And if we bring in students who just aren't prepared, and that's not their fault, you know, maybe they've come from a terrible background or a public school system that's failing, then what can we do? And I think that, you know, a good alternative would be like economic affirmative action. I think that's just a better way to look at it, because like, what does race have to do with
wouldn't that lead to the same like issue of like preparation that you were talking about?
Yeah, but economic affirmative action just focuses, I would say, more on like people that are able to do the work but come from the background. Because like, you can have like, if we just do it based on race, there are plenty of rich minority people here, right? But in my view, if we're really focused on, if the goal of affirmative action is to bring up those who have been trampled down the most historically, that should be done not just on race, but more pertinently on poverty, because we should focus on uplifting those who are most impoverished, right?
Yeah, I definitely do agree with that. I think it's very, because like, if you think about what universities are supposed to do, it's like help people achieve the American dream, and like the people who are going to need the most, help achieving the American dream are going to be like, you know, at a certain like, you know, kind of economic level that's like definitely, you know, going to be maybe at times like you can't, you know, maybe even like afford to pay college. Because I think that's also like another thing. I think the real solution we're talking about college is like take out so much like the weight and like importance out of it, to a certain extent, like, and that I think would make the education and like the actual, you know, what it's supposed to be there for in terms of, you know, giving you skills for a good job and then, you know, a career that's going to be more fulfilling instead of like a more, you know, menial like kind of like factory job that like, or whatever, that would be like, you know, I think just like making it less of a like more accessible in general. It's just like, it's gonna be so important, because like, you know, to a certain extent, like, you could have, I think definitely have like, giving those people like, or economic, like, or poor people like a chance to go to college, making it more, making it easier is gonna be like really, like, you could let that happen, but like, wouldn't you, like, by that same token, if you're going to let people from worse economic backgrounds come to college, aren't you going to like have to a certain extent like help them like pay for it if it's going to be such a
exorbitant high price? That's exactly what I'm arguing. And you know, the reality is this probably, like, we already have programs like this, something with a Q, QuestBridge, that's what it's called. So there's a program called QuestBridge Scholars, which really focuses on low income people and bring low income people, no matter the background, who are academically qualified, and they pair them with universities, and they go to these great schools and they succeed, right? And they do great. And I think, it is a pie in the sky kind of idea, because, you know, a school like Tufts, we have like 70% of people here are paying full price. And I think that Tufts is, this is my opinion, not to rag on Tufts. Yeah, no, a lot of people are paying full price here. I think it's 70%. It's definitely high. It's definitely past 60. Yeah. You know, and Tufts, I'm not going to rag on Tufts too much. It's, you know, I love the school. I am so grateful to be here. But Tufts is in a situation where they want to build prestige, and they're, as we see with, you could even take like, you know, like the divest from fossil fuels, and, you know, Tufts refusal to do that. They're focused on building the endowment, increasing the prestige in the university, because those are things that they are interested in doing. And unfortunately, admitting, like, spending more money on, low-income students just doesn't seem consonant with that vision of, okay, we need to increase the endowment size, we need to make our university better, we're spending our money, you know, on the CUM Center over there, the Cumming Center, and, you know, and if we admit more minorities or more low-income students, it would be, you know, a big expense, and in a sense, and a huge risk. We're not like Harvard, where we have, you know, $40 billion sitting around, $42 billion, whatever. We have, you know, I think almost $3 billion in endowment, which is huge, but Harvard just has so much more capital. You know, and that's just an unfortunate reality of, you know, life. And I think, thankfully, we have, you know, a relatively robust community college system that can, you know, help those that are in need. But, you know, ideally, I think affirmative action should be done, you know, on that economic basis of who needs the most help, regardless of race. And it turns out, disproportionately the people who are poor are minority. So you're still going to be admitting minority students who need the help the most to these schools who are prepared to succeed. And I think that's the most important thing we can do. You know, some people would disagree with me. And, you know, you definitely don't want to frame it. You don't want to frame it as, okay, affirmative action, bad, get it out. You know, I think that it's great to have programs in place that are designed to not only deliver great results, but designed to uplift those who really need the help the most. And that it can be, and I think, just done off of an economic basis, that's the best way.
Yeah, I would say, like, anytime you're making it easier for the American dream, the American dream to be more alive and, you know, more, respected and more achievable for more people. And I think college is also a great way to, like, help that and, encourage that. It's the way it's definitely been done in the past. I think it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess we'll see when this decision comes out. I think next year is when we will
it's been a while. But I think we can all predict
what's going to happen. Yeah, I mean, Harvard and UNC, I think those are the two schools that are kind of spearheading the effort.
I think it'll be interesting because, like, there would be a pretty legitimate effort by, you know, hopefully, you know, by, like, a lot of, like, good intentioned schools that still want to do, you know, ways of, like, you know, I saw Tufts, like, they sent out that very, we are very concerned, like, email.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right, when the case came out, like, is this going to be the motivation for them to try, like, finally try and, like, do a system like we're talking about that's more, like, it's still probably going to help, you know, majority, minority people.
Right.
But, you know, it's going to be a great way to also kind of skirt around what the Supreme Court is
outlawing. I mean, I'm confident that even if affirmative action as it stands now, which is such an ambiguous term because we really don't know what's happening inside these admissions offices, like, we can't predict what's going to happen, but, you know,
we saw it gets abolished. JT Duck just the other
day. JT Duck. Yeah, that's tough. That's supposedly
a very, you know, affirmative action friendly kind of admissions officer. Yeah. So it's like, it's all down to the, you know, the people in the place, I guess.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, so, I mean, I'm sure that universities are going to find some other way to, you know, get around, you know, if it gets struck down. I'm sure they're interested, nonetheless, for whatever reason, whether it be, you know, as we're talking about, like, serving a certain purpose of improving our nation, but also just, like, coming, like, making sure that they are seen as a diverse and tolerant institution. They will find a way, I'm confident, to kind of get around that issue and find a way to, like, increase their minority yield. Because what's going to happen is if it really does get struck down, I mean, Tufts is going to be Asian and whites. That's it. You know?
Interesting, yeah.
I think a lot of schools are going to be like that, too. I mean, if you go to University of California, which is, they've actually, believe it or not, they abolished affirmative action in California. So that's why, the UC system, so UCLA.
Wasn't that in, like, a referendum last year?
Yeah, it was a little while ago. It was, like, Proposition 209 or something like that.
Yeah, I believe that was, like, I believe that was, like, in the last 2 to 3 years, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because I was going to bring that up, but I wasn't sure if it was just the town in California, but now it was, like, the fact that it was the whole state. Yeah, I think if affirmative action doesn't, like, succeed in a place like California, it's probably the most diverse state. No, I don't know if it's the most diverse state in the country, but it's, like, it's got to be up there. You know, I think that's definitely a fair sign to say, like, hey, we could, like, reevaluate this, make it more effective. Like, not that there's, like, you know, not that we have to stop, like, you know, lifting people up into college through kind of, like, better ways, but I think, you know, also we got to make the we got to do something on the end for the colleges. I think making the colleges less of, like, reforming the way they do business, and also, you know, making it maybe less race based.
Yeah.
Especially now after this. And also, because it definitely does hurt, like, you know, Asians, for example.
Absolutely.
You know, way, way more than even white people.
Yeah, I mean, I remember reading a study where it said, I mean, this is super, like, controversial to say, but I read this Princeton study that said, like, black individual students who apply are given basically the equivalent of, like, 300 or 400 extra SAT points compared to Asian people.
There's
a table
of, like, the deciles, and it was,
yeah,
like, which percent of students get accepted in which decile, which is, like, even for, like, the top decile for, like, Asian Americans, it was, like, still a fraction of what it was for even, like, white or black or Hispanic.
Hispanic people. And it's like, you know, it's, I understand that, you know, black and Hispanic people have been, you know, trodden upon in society, but it's like, at this point in time, do we want to have a system where Asians are penalized for, you know, being super successful? I know that, you know, the Asian, I'm part of the Asian community, and I'm, I'm half Asian. So, I mean, all the Asian people that I've talked to about this issue are, they're very, in some sense, opposed. Like, my mom is very opposed. They think it's unfair. Like, the, she went to, I mean, she told me a story where she was at UPenn, and she would, you know, she's friends with all the Asian people at her UPenn med school. And when the affirmative action was brought up, it's super, they're, the group is super liberal, yet the Asian community was very, very opposed to it. And they knew that they had to work, they felt like they had to work super, super hard, like harder than everyone else to, you know, get to this great place. And so it's like, do I know that, you know, the system's always going to be imperfect that we create, but do we want to have a system which, you know, penalizes a group of people that work very, very hard and who are very, very qualified for trying, you know, in, with respect to getting into these schools? And that's a question that I can't really answer.
I definitely think making it some kind of more like economic based system is going to be more of like a better, and it's also going to be like less divisive between people, I think, who should like be seeing like groups of people that just should see like a lot more in common with each other than like reason to like think that one or the other is getting like kind of an unfair advantage or anything like that, and like, you know, any kind of ill will building up between people that, like, you know, like, why should there be any ill will there, you know?
It's super interesting. But I guess we'll see coming into next year. I'm, you know, we want, I think, to have campuses that are diverse, and I know that that's a very general statement because
That can mean like
that's people, a lot of things.
People say, oh, that means like ideological diversity,
correct?
Or it means, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Racial diversity, and it's just like, it's crazy because, you know, colleges, I don't know, this is me kind of ranting a little bit about more about diversity, but colleges are all about diversity, and I agree with it. Like, let's have that. But in reality, I feel like, and I think for a lot of people, they don't really feel that diversity on campus. You know, you see people that are different from you, but you really don't interact with people. And when you go into the dining hall, for instance, you walk into the dining hall, the athletes are with the athletes, the white people are with the white people, Asian people are with the Asian people. And it's like, okay, we got diversity in this kind of nebulous, general kind of idea. But overall, it's really hard to break out of this place where, okay, I'm an Asian guy, kind of nerdy, kind of with the rowing community or athletes, I'm going to stick with the athletes and the white people because that's who I associate myself with.
Yeah. You know? Like, do you feel like as if you were kind of like, if you were an Asian and you tried to like, you know, hang out with more like, you know, the Asian like groups on campus, do you feel like that would be like a harder thing for you to do?
Maybe. I mean, I mean, like, I am like quasi part of like a Korean Student Association, and I just feel like, like, Enoch, my roommate, is, you know, a really big part of that. And it just feels like a complete different world than what I'm usually a part of. They have their... It's a whole community. It's a partying community. It is a social community. It is, like, a housing community where they all live together and they are part of this, these groups together. And so it's, like, as an outsider, like, trying just to get to know these people, it's a little hard when, you know, they're making references to events that... in the past that I've never been a part of, or like they talk about people and joke about people that I've never been like a part of, you know, never heard of. So just like breaking in, I think that's the same, you know, the same can be said for like anybody trying to enter a new space. It's just hard to to like, you know, reflect and to associate yourself with people that who have had very, very different experiences than you have, you know.
I would definitely say that's like totally true. I didn't realize like it's very much of, like, a sectarian, I would say, environment. It's totally true. Like, you have, like, people who... I would definitely say it's a very, like, diverse place. But, you know, just because of, like, the activities that I join... you know, in the... Like, I came to... I'm getting, like, a very, like, kind of diverse experience. I certainly, like, certainly have, you know, with, like, the people in the school. But, yeah, just, like, through, you know, joining your own, like, friend groups. And just, like, you know, I... Just like you, like, I'm rower, so it's, like, I... ended up mostly, just being around a lot of the same, you know, rowers demographically. If you're at all familiar with the sport, you know, like, I hung out with a lot of, like, rowers in high school, so I was, like, a high school, like, rowing team. And, you know, it's just, like, the, you know, same types of people kind of all throughout. And that, you know, can be, like, you know, very interesting experience. And like, once you're with that kind of like Franklin, it's very, you know, can't like, it's so hard to just like add.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's so hard to add activities and different groups mm-hmm. of people. And you know what? It is a function of human nature. I would say people want to be around other people that look like them and that have the same interests as them.
Yeah.
And it, oh, you know, exactly. That is at any place in the United States or elsewhere, and especially so in college, people associate themselves with mm-hmm. people that they're attracted to for whatever reason. And, you know, I can count on one hand how many black people I've talked to. And I think that's a sad thing. Mm-hmm. But it's just, like, really hard to just, like, walk up to them. They're all in groups and just say hi, you know, or just, like, it's usually just, like, one-on-one in the dorm. But it's just, like, there's a little bit of a... just like a gap there, and it's not like a racial thing, it's just like an existence kind of thing. It's just like, you're part of this group, I'm part of this group.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just hard to like kind of relate. I hope we can change that, because that's what diversity is all about. It's not about, you know, okay, we have all these groups in one place, great, you know, okay, mm-hmm. they're at Tufts University, we have X percentage of black and Hispanic people, therefore we are diverse. It's about, okay, how do we get these people to share their experiences together and build experiences together and to create, you know, bridges.
Yeah, actually, like, kind of, like, coexist and interact.
Exactly.
So it's,
exactly.
like, it's not like it's, like, we're, like, different. Like, we're more, like, yeah, like, we have our different, like, we're all appreciating and, like, knowledgeable about, like, you know, every, honestly, like, to a certain extent, like, I feel like that's working. Like, I feel like, honestly, like, that I've been more, like, exposed just to, like, different, you know, different, like, groups of people just mm-hmm. by, kind of, like osmosis and kind of being on the same campus
yeah.
where like all this like very interesting like cultural like celebrations are kind of I remember like last year I was like went out on the academic quad or I think it was like actually the res quad. There was like this party for an Indian holiday.
Sure.
I was just like, oh, that's really cool, you know. And it's like, yeah, I would have never known that if I had just gone to like, you know, probably like, I don't know, Alabama or something.
Oh,
like
absolutely.
That. No, yeah, but like, I'd say like that. Yeah, still, it's like, it still is kind of hard to say that like you get a real sense of, and I also think it's like, it's certain people, it's like, what kind of like, it's like social and economic background, mm-hmm. I think, which family mm-hmm. grew up. And it's like, that also definitely kind of informs like the way people act and like meeting as many different people from as many different like racial economic impact. It's just like such a, you know, valuable skill to have. And
absolutely.
I think, yeah, definitely like as university, like as this university policy wise, I think, you know, and it's tough like for the administration to be like, you know, black people, white people, like
yeah.
mix up, mm-hmm. like go together,
yeah.
you know, it's like something that kind of, I feel like to a certain extent has to happen naturally, but I think, you know, encouraging that would be, make the college experience better for
absolutely.
Everyone.
Yeah. And I think, you know, my personal opinion on the whole, well, yeah, diversity issue, but also just like the racism issue. If, you know, it, obviously it exists on campus. We have situations where students look down upon other students because mm-hmm. of their race, and I think mm-hmm. that's terrible. But the way you fix that or you address that, it is not through presentations or, like you were saying, forced activities created by the university for the students as kind of, not propaganda, but just as like, okay, here, this is how you should be thinking. The way you get people to actually overcome their prejudice and mm-hmm. overcome, you know, that gap is to share the same goals with one another. You have to have a situation where a diverse mix of people, like a rowing team or like any other team, have a same goal, and they are working towards this one. They have this one activity that they share. I think, and, you know, it's obviously hard to do that on a campus with, you know, such a diverse set of people, but the wonderful thing about being like, you know, on a team is that when you're on a team or you're in a group or you're, you know, playing music with other people or something like that, like, race doesn't matter, you know,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter. You are with your friends and you are working towards something greater than yourself. That's how you break that. That's my opinion, at least. I think that's the only way.
Yeah. But it's like, if you're on a team, like, how do you, that's the question, is like, how do you like get those, like,
exactly.
Get like those type of people who are like from way different backgrounds.
Sure.
How do you get them to like come together and be like, you know, we're going to actually like, you know, hang out. We're going to like do some, like,
yeah.
do stuff together, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, honestly, yeah, it's like, it's very, it's like, there's like, yeah, there's events, you know, there's events. Oh, we got
someone calling it. Wait, it's going to flash again. Oh, yes. Okay.
Yes.
Wait, let me see if I can figure this out.
So,
all right.
Yeah,
so I'm going to go boom. Hello? Hello?
Ryan? Hello?
Oh, wait, press the... Yeah,
do... Hello?
We're trying to get Ryan Kane on the line here, I think. So
yeah,
Max is working on that.
Yeah,
one of the toughest things in learning how to become a DJ is like doing the appropriate phone system. But yeah, wait, is there the sheet out there up there?
I'm not pressing in the right order, but here. Let me give him a call. Let's get him on the line.
Yeah, we can get him on the line the old-fashioned way.
Yeah. Let me give him a call.
Yeah, that's where we got Ryan King calling in from from Colorado. Yeah, we can do it one more time. We can do it over the airwaves.
All right. You might need to help me here. So.
Yeah, no, I got you.
Okay. All right. This is my first time. Okay, here he is calling in. I'm gonna watch the buttons. Go ahead.
All right. Wait. Phone.
I think.
Best one's flashing.
Hello?
Hi, I have a question to ask.
Oh, you're on the air, yeah. Please.
Well, you know, as the Supreme Court hears this case on affirmative action practice at Harvard, it's difficult to not feel a sense of a relationship or an interest with the material that's being argued in Washington. And I'm finding your conversation compelling, and now that you have spent time at Tufts and gained a greater appreciation of the college admissions process, as well as diversity, what is your perspective on ALD students, which are students that are legacy recruits or...
Oh, yeah, I've heard a lot about that.
That is a good question.
Process.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought we should...
Yeah.
I was thinking at the back of my mind when I got distracted from bringing that up.
No,
we have, like, such a very interesting perspective on that.
Yeah.
Because we are the A... in ALD.
Absolutely,
there.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's, like, a very interesting conversation because, like, I've thought about that a lot because, like, I was, you know, I was definitely helped a lot by getting into Tufts by the fact that I was recruited, and it's just, like, I think about it, like, do I, like, really academically, like, do I deserve to be here? Like, did I beat out someone else? So I think it's a very fair point. And yeah, if you like all those, you know, I think those are all kind of very, very similar because they're kind of going based on a very arbitrary quality. Like, was it a lot of work? Was it a commitment that I think a lot of people, you know, who are kind of like saying, oh, you're an athlete, like, would they have wanted to like really like do like put in all the commitment that it was to like get recruited, to row here? Like, I don't know. But by that same token, like, is it, you know, something that's a very sketchy way to get into an academic, you know, institution? You know, I would say if you're, you know, judging, like, you know, supposed to, like, you know, purely based on, like, a meritous, you know, merit-based process, like, you know, the same way any of the, you know, legacy or, you know, I think they're all kind of varying degrees of sketchy. Mm-hmm. Like, I think legacy probably being the most sketchy.
Yep.
But, you know, like, that and really donations as well. But, they're all, you know, kind of ways that are just, like, you know, not straight academic. So mm-hmm. I think they're all kind of up for criticism.
Yeah, I would say my opinion is, and obviously I'm biased because I'm an athlete as well, I think that athletes do bring some value to campus. They promote a sense of school spirit and, I guess, interconnectedness between different colleges. So I think it's great to have athletes. I think that we should work on bringing in athletes that can not only succeed on the field, but succeed in the classroom, right? We want to create an environment where regular students don't feel like athletes, they feel like athletes bring something, you know, to the table, but that they're able to, like, succeed in the classroom. It's not a situation where it's like, oh my God, Max Landers, he's a great rower, but he freaking sucks in, you know, the classroom. Like, get him out of here, right? We don't want that. We want a situation where it's like, wow, these athletes are super smart, and not only that, they're doing this awesome activity that's promoting, you know, mm-hmm. school spirit. On the legacy front, I would have to say, and donations as well, I disagree with it. I think that the universities have to fundamentally make a choice. That choice being, okay, what is our goal? What is our goal with respect to being fair and equal and promoting the, like, giving resources to those who need it most? Or are we just going to
just, okay, we'll create this system of nepotism where it's like, okay, we'll bring you in if you donate, you know, $10 million for our new building. I think that's fundamentally wrong. I think that universities should just be about bringing in those who are emeritus and who have worked hard and who deserve to be there, just based on their individual contributions and their academic achievements as a whole, rather than the achievements of their, you know, parents or whoever else in their family.
Ryan, I would have to ask if you're... Ryan, are you still there, by the way?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, I would have to ask what you think about athletic admissions and recruiting.
Yeah, this is going to have to be the last question as well. We're running out of time, unfortunately, so let's hear it.
Sure, so just on the athletic recruits or just on ALDCs in general?
Everything, sure.
Yeah, start with athletes, though.
With athletes, sure. Well, similar to you, I was recruited to come to Tufts Roe, and therefore, it's hard for me to say that being recruited is not a fair, part of the admissions process, because you are bringing an aspect to the school, similar to if you played a certain instrument that was needed in the orchestra, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is there requirements for that?
In some schools, yeah.
I don't know that.
Oh, continue, Ryan, please.
And also our purpose is to bring home wins at different regattas and to help Tufts in these athletic competitions, right? And I think last year we were really successful in that, in getting that Learfield Director Cup. So, and that, again, helps Tufts in the college rankings process.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I do believe that the athletic part is actually necessary, but I am firmly opposed to any kind of dean's list or legacies being an influential part in the admissions process, because just like you said, I think that colleges should be completely based on the merit and not based on, and merit can be both academic and athletic, but should not be based on how much money or how many connections you have within the university.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's the right thing. All right, well, thank you all for listening. Ryan, thanks for joining the call and or joining the show
thank
and
you.
Bringing that wonderful question. That is definitely something that we should be considering in this conversation. And Spencer, thank you for joining me today.
It's an absolute pleasure.
It was wonderful. It was a great discussion. We'll be back this Saturday. Appreciate you guys for listening, and stay cool. Take care. Na
sun. O sol bebe o trem azul. Você.
COVID-19, WMFO DJs are pre-recording their shows for broadcast on air. We can still accept phone calls, but the phone line is in voicemail mode. Call 855-915-9636 and be sure to leave the DJ's name in the voicemail so we can forward it to the correct person. The following program was recorded earlier.